whole thing to you, but you might like to read it. This, the object of the book of Job by a man named J. Sidlow Baxter. But at the top it says, we cannot understand the meaning of many trials. God does not explain them. To explain a trial would be to destroy its object, which is that of calling forth simple faith and implicit obedience. If we knew why the Lord sent us this or that trial, it would thereby cease to be a trial either of faith or of patience, said Alfred Edersheim. And here are some helpful notes by J. Sidlow Baxter about the object and message of the book of Job. And here he has some good comments about the message and object of this that are helpful. Again, I won't read all those paragraphs to you, except to say the people in it do not know what you know. As you read the book, you know that there is a council in heaven that decided this, and they did not know that. So turn over on the inside page, would you? The inside page. Job was not meant to know. And there are undoubtedly some things in our lives, even today, that we are supposed to know and do know. But it had to be true of all of us as well, that there are things happening that we are not meant to know the whole picture of just now. The fact is, Job was not meant to know the explanation of his trial and what a trial it was. And upon this simple fact, everything hangs. If Job had known, there would have been no place for faith. The man could never have come forth as gold purified in the fire. We are meant to understand that there are some things that God cannot reveal to us at present, inasmuch as the very revealing of them would thwart his purposes for our good. The scriptures are wise in their reservation as they are in their revelations. Enough is revealed to make faith intelligent. Enough is reserved to give faith scope for development. So we find now Job is going to speak. We'll read the first 10 verses. I'll just read it. And they have him, his friends have been silent, far as we know, maybe absolutely silent, but at least relatively silent for a week. Those are friends. These are not his enemies. They're not a bunch of Pharisaical hypocrites. They are his friends who came to comfort him. And now, after a week has gone by, Job finally speaks. And we should remember that this is a great Christian man. This is a chosen believer. He's an excellent man and very, very perplexed. So it says here, after this, death of the children, 10 of them, his diseases, terrible diseases, the loss of his property, his animals, after this, opened Job his mouth and cursed his day. And Job spake and said, and when we read this, we should try to remember, he didn't read it in a monotone. He probably read this in an oriental outburst, complete with agonizing intonation of his voice. Most likely, what we're reading tonight included wild, untamed, wailing curses that strike at the only thing left, and that is his birth. Let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man-child conceived. In the Oriental countries, they make a big to-do when a man-child is conceived. They shout, it's a boy! Let that day be darkness. Let not God regard it from above, neither let light shine upon it. Let darkness and the shadow of death stain it. Let a cloud dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize upon it. Let it not be joined unto the days of the year, or wipe it off the calendar. Let it not come into the number of the months. Lo, let that night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come therein. Let them curse it that curse the day, who are ready to raise up their mourning. Let the stars of the twilight thereof be dark. Let it look for light, but have none. Neither let it see the dawning of the day, because it shut not up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from mine eyes. And in these verses, you can see that Job is wishing he had never been born, and he means it. Here is a man who is very accomplished, who must have enjoyed much satisfaction in his life, community leader, parent of 10 apparently healthy children, successful businessman, understood, a mature spiritual man. And yet, after all that, he hates the day he was born. He wishes it didn't exist. And over 15 times, he curses his birth. And so, Job is, in some sense, one of us after all. Even if we doubted it after reading chapters 1 and 2. And you read chapters 1 and 2 and you hear about all his losses, you'd say, who could endure all that? Who could say, God, the Lord gave and the Lord has taken away after all that? You know, who could say that even after physical diseases? But the property and the animals and the children. And you say, you know, it's almost like he's not even one of us. But now we find he is one of us. And why does Job hate the day that he's born? And he does hate it. This man hurts so bad, he actually hates the fact that he's born. And look at letter C there. It is apparently God's inexplicable change of dealings toward Job that shape his death wish. Entirely deprived of practically every taste of divine goodness, Job views death as the best option for him. And he does understand, and he'll say later, it's because what God has done, and that I just hate the day I was born. Now that's deep sorrow. That's deep agony. It's very real. Let's notice the next section. Job wishes that he had died at birth. And some of you have had considerable suffering and setbacks and disappointments. And the reflex question of all of us when we suffer is that three-letter word that begins verse 11, why? Why here he wishes now that he is born, he has been born, he takes this further and says, well, I wish I died a little baby. I wish I was stillborn. Why died I not from the womb? You know, he hates his existence. He means it. Why did I progress one day after coming out of the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me? Or why the breast that I should get sucked, that I should be a nursing child? For now. And he means, I wonder exactly what kind of tone he is. He's looking, he's communicating to those men who are looking at him. And I wonder if there was some sarcasm in it. For now, if I only would have been stillborn, I should have lain still. I would be quiet. I should have slept. Then I'd be at rest. If only I had died. Well, he said it with more emotion than I did. Now he's reminiscing of the people who are dead, envying them with kings and counselors of the earth who built desolate places for themselves, or with the princes that had gold who filled their houses with silver, as in hidden, untimely birth I had not been, as infants which never saw light. There the wicked cease from troubling. There the weary be at rest. There the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. The small and great are there, and the servant is free from his master. And I have a suspicion that he was vexed, angry, frustrated, depressed, and he's philosophizing in front of three fellows who are pretty still and well-to-do, and they're well. And he waxes eloquent about how better death would be. And I just point out here that the why comes out. Why? Why didn't I die? And you can think of that sometimes too. You can think back at, this could have been avoided. Why wasn't it avoided? Look over on the next page. Job means what he says. Why didn't I die at birth? If only I had died at birth. So, first of all, he wishes he'd never been born. Next, he wishes, now that he has been born, he would have died at birth, but neither of those are options. So now he'll come to the final part. Job wishes he could die now, but he will not kill himself. And we should be reminded, I think it's about 85 a day in the United States and Russia and Japan, every day, people pull the plug, about 3 an hour. And that's only the ones that are reported. It's probably more than that. And life is hard for lots of people. But what's remarkable here is this is a believer. This is a mature believer. And he is going through a God-designed test for him. And this year, will go through God-designed tests. And probably you will too. This book is in here to help you to observe believers going through God-designed tests, and you're in the midst of a battle. Job really didn't know. He didn't know that the devil had discussed him and God had discussed him. But we know, and we should know that we are subject of similar things. Happily not to this extent, at least not yet. Let's notice verse number 3 here. Job wishes that he could die now, but he will not kill himself. Look at verse 19. Verse 20. So he's said, I wish I had died, and I would have a kind of freedom. He may be implying that it is God he wants to be free from. I think that comes up, that he really wishes he could be free from God. So look at verse 20. Wherefore is light given to him that is in misery? In other words, he says, look at me. Why shouldn't I want to die? What is the point of going on? That is where people are when they want to die. And he does want to die. And there are people who today want it to be over. And some of them are young people. Some of them are people at a public school. They have no friends. They don't understand what's going on. Some of those people want it to be over. And there are believers who who have probably taken missteps. There are probably believers who are right in the center of God's will, and some of them are wondering, is it even worth it? So notice Job asks that question. Wherefore is light? He means the light of life. Why does it continue? To him that's in and life unto him bitter in soul, which long for death. That's him. He says, I want to die. Joni Erickson Tada, that excellent and extraordinary woman, writes, she has stated over and over that she craved death. Her most bothersome fact when she was 16, 17, after the accident, that she couldn't kill herself. She wanted to commit suicide. She was a believer. She wasn't a particularly strong one, but she was one. She said, I want to die. Couldn't die. Oh, we're all glad now. I love to hear that woman on the radio. That woman is just hearing her is encouraging. And you say, you know, somebody like that, if she can do what she did, there must be hope for me. And I think that's encouraging. Sam, Will, how about bring this to your mom and Gloria? We're on point three. We're doing Job, Gloria and Laura. We're on Job chapter 3. So Job, and point number 3 on the second page there. Job wishes that he could die now, but he will not kill himself. Now that's striking. And really it shows that in him, even in his awful situation, there's still strong life in him. That's a mysterious thing about our existence. He won't take his own life. We'd be good if this subject never even needed to be discussed, but it does need to be discussed. I bet all of us know people or have people have told us, you know, I'm thinking about taking my own life. I remember a guy came to me on the ship, and he was a real jerk, and he made lots of enemies. And he told me, he said, I'm just thinking about taking my own life. And I halfway think he meant it. And we've heard others. And maybe you have come to the place where you're wondering, you know, is this worth it? So let's look just briefly at this. Verse 22, which rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find the grave. Well, listen to that. Rejoice exceedingly to find a grave. And I don't know what tone he gave it in, but he didn't just say it in a monotone. Why is light given to a man whose way? Notice this word. He now addresses God. God did this to me. And folks, God did do it to him. God takes credit for this. The devil could not have done anything unless God let him do it. So look at verse 23, and this really makes the trial hard. Why is light given to a man whose way is hid, whom God hath hedged in? For my sighings cometh before I eat, and my roarings are poured out like the waters. Roarings like waters. You know, some of you ladies have had husbands who've not well. Really not well. So are they just quiet like mice? My roarings, are poured forth like water. For the thing which I greatly feared has come upon me, and that which I was afraid of has come. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet, yet trouble came. Well, just notice your hand out there. Job wishes that he could die now, but he will not kill himself. Job, Leighton Talbert said, it's not even permitted the dignity of death, though he begs God for it. And he asserts that God has hedged him in and will not let him die. And Job has this much is right. God has hedged him in. He's not going to let him die, and he's going to bring him out in dizzying wonder, and Job is going to marvel at how good God has been to him. And he's marveling tonight. So this title of our lesson tonight, longing for death but not suicidal. Look at number four there. Though some Christians flirt with suicide, and some even commit suicide, there's just no doubt that some Christians probably have done it. I'm almost positive that's true. I think the vast majority who take their own lives are not Christians, but probably there have been Christians who've done it.
I had a nephew that did.
Yeah, and I heard of a man, he was my age, and prominent in missions in Voice of the Martyrs, and before that, lots of other, he was a well-named fellow. And then one of the speakers at Tennessee Temple, Truman Dollar. And in both these cases, they were both involved in immorality, and both of them took their own lives, with gunshots. And look at your notes there. Though some Christians flirt with suicide and even commit suicide, Job never contemplated taking his own life. So I'm going to ask you, here's your part to fill in some of these blanks. Throughout the Bible, other godly men under great duress also ask God for death. So Job wanted to die. When he says in here, I'm longing for the grave, he means it. You know, he had 10 children die. His health is gone. He said he doesn't have little health problems, so he wants to die. Okay, so look at your notes there. Throughout the Bible, other godly men under duress, great duress, also ask God for death. Such requests argue against suicide, not for it. None of them regarded taking his own life as an option. So who were these? Number one, those who longed for death were notable saints. Okay, who's the first one found in Numbers 11? Who would that be? Daniel, do you remember there was a great man and he said, just, I won't, kill me if you have to.
Moses.
Moses. Right, Moses in there. I think there's six, no, I got one letter too many. Oh, no, I don't. Yeah, five. That's the next. So Moses. Well, Moses was under enormous stress and pressure, and he knew God, and he made a death request. He said, nope, not answering that prayer. Glad God doesn't answer all our prayers. Okay, the next one. What famous person in 1 Kings 19 said, it's enough, O Lord, take away my life? Who is that?
Elijah.
That was Elijah. He too. He is a distinguished person. He too had extreme pressure. Just extreme things. And he knew God. And here's a person God had fed him. Can you imagine birds bringing you your bread and meat in the morning and evening? I don't know how long. It wasn't just a couple months. And then prayed down the rain and the fire from heaven on the sacrifice, and he said, take away my life. Well, that just shows you what kind of creatures we are, the variableness any of us are capable of. Okay, and who's the next one? Which Old Testament prophet said, he said, I'm mad enough to die. Who's that? He was a sailor for a short time.
Jonah.
God talked to him. He said, Jonah, can you imagine that? Doest thou well to be angry? He said, I'm angry enough to die. I just think that's something else. That I guess it's funny because I'm looking at it not from Jonah's point of view. I'm looking at it from years of history, and I know how it came out. And it came out good for the Ninevites. It came out good for Jonah. It came out good for the cattle. So it's easy to say. But anyway, notice there. These men did not take their own lives. Well, here's a good comment from Leighton Talbert. Look on your notes there. Only the treacherous ever took their own lives. For suicide is an unauthorized taking of life from its giver and owner. Job 12:2. Daniel, look up Job 12:2 and read it to us in just a minute. 12:2
or 12:10?
I'm sorry. 12:10. Just a minute. Your life belongs to God, spirit and body, along with the breath that sustains it. Let's be reminded of that. I have a body tonight and it belongs to someone. I could call it mine and that would be true. It's also somebody else's. And my spirit, it's my spirit and it's somebody else. Somebody owns it. And that's true whether you're a believer. 1 Corinthians 6 says, know you not that your body and spirits are God's? You are the temple of the Holy Ghost, whose temp, and it just says God owns you. He has purchased you. And he even said that to Belteshazzar, the heathen king, the blasphemer. He said, your breath is in God's hands. How many think Hillary Clinton's breath is in God's hands? I do. He can take it when he wants to. And I think Donald Trump's breath is in his hands. And he can take it when he wants to. And he will take it when he wants to. No matter whether they like it or not, he's still going to call the final shots. And frankly, all in between two. Could you read that one, Daniel? Job 12:10.
Whose hand is the life of every living thing and the breath of all mankind?
Okay. In whose hand is the breath of every living thing and all mankind? Well, that's right. That's the true state of things. That's so. It's his world. All this belongs to him. Well, that does make our trials harder when we believe we're God's adopted children, born-again children, both. And we have excruciating trials. And tonight, I want to guarantee you, there are believers who are at extreme difficulties. There just are. And I'd like to just point out two scriptures before we read this last paragraph. Would you turn over, first of all, to Lamentations, chapter 1 and verse 12. Job was not under a curse. God loved Job, and Job was picked for a hard mission. But God was not cursing Job. Satan hated Job, and Satan hates you too, with a rabid hatred. And God allowed Satan to vent some of his hatred on Job. But look at this. Here is something we should think about. I want to look at this one and one in Hebrews 2:8. Here is a suffering city under the curse. If we're under God's trials, he's going to bring us through them. But here is the curse. Is it nothing to you, all ye that pass by? Behold and see if there be any sorrow like unto my sorrow, which is done unto me, wherewith the Lord hath afflicted me in the day of his fierce anger. Well, that's sorrow that God did not sustain those people in. That was the sorrow, that was the death sorrow, that was punishment of a wicked people in a wicked city. A great curse, a whole city. But let's turn over to Hebrews 2 just for a moment. And then we'll come back and just read that last little part there. But Hebrews 2, we should never forget this, that we are related to somebody who has suffered more than any of us can comprehend. Jesus suffered in many of the ways Job suffered, physically, mental anguish, exceedingly humiliated. But he also suffered the curse. And look at verse 9, talking about Jesus suffering for sinful humanity. But we see Jesus, Hebrews 2:9, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death. He came knowing, I'm coming here to suffer. He knew it. If I take this mission, it's a suffering mission. Oh, that we should be glad. That's what kind of God we have. He knew it. He knew what we're like. He knew what it would cost us, would cost him. And he would came down for suffering of death. Crowned with glory and honor, he's now crowned with glory and honor, that he by the grace of God should taste death for every man. That word taste death, it doesn't mean a little sip. It means a full experience. And we can be thankful in that death, our curse is gone. Our punishments, anything we deserve for our sins in the way of judicial punishment is exhausted and gone forever. That's true of the weakest Christian, and that's true of the strongest one and all of them in between. We must never forget that. Let's just conclude. Turn back. You can look on your handout. But in the meantime, between now and in the time you're going to go to heaven and meet the Lord, you'll have a mixture of circumstances. And I'll have a mixture. Some of them will be suffering. He's bringing many brethren to glory. And he is perfecting them through sufferings, as he perfected Christ through sufferings, brought Job to completion through sufferings. He's going to bring you to completion through sufferings. Probably not near what Job went through, but we'll have to have some. Let's just conclude with this question taken from Leighton Talbert also. Is Job a good example of grieving? You know, Job grieves in here. And you read some of his grieving. We won't reread the verses. Look at that paragraph. By God's own testimony, Job is a spiritual giant on the earth. We should never forget that. That God's testimony about Job all the way through, he said, God never makes a mistake in his assessment of people. He said, hast thou considered my servant Job? There is none like him in all the earth, perfect, upright, fears God and eschews evil. He's at the top. That's the top man. Oh, that's pretty good. That's more than pretty good. He's at the top of all humanity on the planet. That's God's estimate of him. And so Job, God just says about him, he is the best one. Sometimes Job is heroic, chapters 1 and 2. Sometimes Job is just wrong. And later, Job will say, I want God to come to court with me and I'll prove him wrong. And folks, it doesn't matter what happens to you or me, we're never supposed to say that. You don't put God on trial. He doesn't answer to you. And your justice, Job just said, my justice, in all practical purposes, later he'll just say, my justice is better than his. He doesn't really mean to say that, but he does say that, and it's very clear. And you will hear God at the end say, did you want me to come to court with you? And you'll say, you know, I take it all back. So God has mercy on us. But notice this, would you? The point isn't, is Job, really, Job is not either here as necessarily a good or a bad example of grieving. Leighton Talbert makes the point, actually, Job is more a portrait of grief. What you're supposed to get out of this is what grief looks like. That's what Job's a portrait of. Look at me, he said. And he even asked his friends, he said, look at me. I'm a portrait of grief. And he is more a portrait of grief than a model of how to grow grief. And I just conclude here at the bottom. Job's frame of mind is still the lot of numbers of true children of God. Try not to forget that. Good Christians walk, some good Christians should say, walk a long, dark valley. Godly Hannah. And it just says, God closed up her womb. You know, she couldn't have children. There wasn't anything that could change that, because God said, no children for you yet. That's a hard thing. And God loved Hannah, but people who God loves have some long, dark roads, and some of them are women, some of them are men. And you can think of dejected Elijah and young Joseph. His brothers told him later, they're conversing among themselves, I told you we shouldn't have left him in there when we saw his anguish. And God knew it was going to cost Joseph anguish. But he went through it, he passed it, and he came out well. Well, I want to just conclude with a verse from John 20. Here's a woman who knew something about difficulty, and we'll just conclude here. And we should take time to pray and thank the Lord and for our tailor-made trials and ask Him to help us pass them and help us to be wise and not to make, I want all the trials I need. I don't want any ones I don't need. We have a song, it says somewhere, oh, what needless pain we bear. Well, if I need to be pain, then I want that. How many of you want to avoid needless pain? Say amen. I want to avoid needless pain. Oh, what needless pain we bear. I don't want any of those. But look at this woman, and I think this is remarkable. It's a good place to conclude as we take a few moments to pray. So here is Mary Magdalene at the tomb, and she's beside herself in grief. And look at verse 17. And Jesus said unto her, touch me not, for I am not yet ascended to my Father. But look at this. But go to my brethren. Here is the God-man. That's the second person of the Godhead, the eternal God who had no beginning. Jesus never began to be. In the beginning, He already was. And now He's the perfect God-man. Look what He calls people who are believers. My brethren. How about that? And say unto them, I ascend unto my Father and to your Father. Well, that sounds pretty good. And He said, now you can come in my name, my merits. You just come as if you were me. And you'll get heard.